Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, April 26, 2016. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. We've got the full group with us today. I'd like to welcome into the call or conversation Patrick Ryan, Dan Williams, and Chris Anderson. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, Joe.
Good morning,
hey,
Joe.
We've got a full deck today, that's for sure. Just if you're joining us for the first time, I think it's a good thing that we provide an introduction just so you know who is on the call today with us. And this is also being streamed live on the internet. Patrick Ryan is the owner and co-owner and president with Ryan Brothers Ambulance in Madison, Wisconsin. Dan Williams is the director for Door County Emergency Services in Sturgeon Bay. And Chris Anderson is the operations manager for Bell Ambulance in Milwaukee. And this is Joe Cavelli, Executive Director with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. It's great to have you with us. This show has grown into something that we like to communicate information with you all about activities that are happening in the state and elsewhere. We've been able to bring some very solid content to you that is very timely. And we sure invite your comments and questions back to us at our email address, emslive@paw.us. If you have any suggestions on guests or people that we should include in the conversation, we sure invite that. Our conversation today is with attorney Wendy Ahrens. Wendy is with Godfrey and Kahn, and we look forward to bringing her into the call and into this podcast here very shortly. But before we begin, I want to ask Chris Anderson about his recent trip to Washington, D.C. Chris, you recently had an opportunity to meet Speaker Paul Ryan. Do you mind sharing that with us?
Absolutely. So we were in Washington for the American Ambulance Association Stars of Life event, and we were able to visit some of our local legislators, Representative Gwen Moore, Senator Ron Johnson, and Senator Tammy Baldwin. And with the two senators, we also had our PAW star, Chief Eske, with us for the meetings. So we got to spend some time with her, and that was great. So we were able to share her story and the Star of Life story in general with the legislators. We were also able to share our position and PAW's position on the pending medication access bill, H.R. 4365, which we're all familiar with, as well as the protecting access or the access to ambulance and fraud reduction bill. I forget the exact name, but it's Senate Bill 377. So those are the two big pieces of legislation that our industry is getting behind. So while the focus was on the stars, fortunately we were able to get a little plug-in for those pending bills as well. So we did have a meeting with the speaker, Paul Ryan. Unfortunately, it was cut short by the announcement that he made a couple of weeks ago that he was really, really, really not running for president. That announcement actually happened just before our scheduled meeting. So our meeting was cut from 15 minutes to 5 minutes. But it was still, pretty interesting conversation, and we were able to share a little bit about, both the American Ambulance Association and PAW, the kind of things that we're hoping to accomplish. So we got a tour of the Capitol, including, the speaker's office suite and balcony and things like that. So it was a pretty neat trip.
Excellent. Thank you very much for sharing that, Chris. And I did get a note from Dion Eske, who was our National Stars of Life honoree representing Wisconsin, and she said what an awesome experience it was, and we recently shared that statewide yesterday with our 14,000 EMS partners. Dion provided a few photos that we sent out with it, so our congratulations. And I know, Chris, you had your star there as well as a part of the awards.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
And,
Yeah, it was a good, she had a great story. Dion had a great story to tell, and it helped us, you know, kind of break the ice with the legislative staff. I mean, you know, they have people in and out all day pitching things, and, you know, they sort of, I think they get a little bit immune to listening to people, but having a story to tell sort of breaks the ice and makes it a little bit more personal.
Very good. Thank you for sharing that with us. Our guest today is Wendy Ahrens with Godfrey & Kahn in Madison. Wendy and attorney Thomas Shorter recently authored an article about ambulance anti-kickback statutes. Their article is posted on the PAW website, so if you'd like to refer to it during this streamed webcast, you are welcome to do so. The website is paaw.us. You'll find it very close to the top under the current news section. It will take you to another link that is the expanded article. We'll invite your questions, too, during the live show. If you do have a question, feel free to press number 1 on your phone keypad. If you're listening on the Internet, you can email us at emslive@paaw.us. Today's program will run about another 25 minutes. It's sponsored today by JMB Medical, Godfrey & Kahn Law Firm in Madison, and AlladTech. This is Wisconsin EMS Live, and I want to bring out something. You know, our last program, we announced that the Attorney General recently signed a deal with Amphastar on a naloxone or Narcan rebate discount for all eligible Wisconsin ambulance services. Patrick Ryan and I provided the announcement via this podcast, but the Attorney General was kind enough to come to Patrick's location at Ryan Brothers in Madison to do the announcement, and that was carried by several media outlets. So if you'd like to refer more to that, just go to the PAW website. JMB Medical is one of our partners, and with the Narcan rebate, they announced a special package, and we wanted to share that with you this morning. To be eligible for the rebate, you can easily access some of the products they have. They have created a kit of sorts that makes it very easy when administering the naloxone or Narcan prefilled syringes. The carrying case is available for $110, and like I mentioned, it is eligible for the manufacturer's rebate. You can contact JMB Medical Sales Representative Josh Tebow at 616-915-6392. The number again, 616-915-6392 for further details. You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin. We'll be back after this brief message.
Godfrey & Kahn, a Wisconsin-based law firm, combines specific experience in numerous practice areas to provide a wide range of legal and business counseling services. The law firm is known for its core business practice and litigation, as well as providing strategic legal advice to the healthcare industry and employers. Their clients range from individuals and small businesses to government entities and large private and public national and international companies. Have a legal question? Contact attorney Thomas Shorter at Godfrey & Kahn, 877-455-2900, or find them on the web at www.gklaw.com.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad. Or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by Patrick Ryan, Chris Anderson, and Dan Williams. I'm also very pleased to bring into our conversation this morning Wendy Ahrens. Wendy, hello and welcome.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you with us again. This is the third time in, I think, the last maybe 4 or 5 months that you've been on with us. So we need to start having you as a regular co-host, I think.
Watch out. You may just have a lawyer as a regular contributing member of your podcast.
All right. Very good. Well, it's great to have you with us. And I know we're covering something, anti-kickback statute, that some in our audience might not be familiar with. It's maybe that dark horse in the room, so to speak, and what you don't know can hurt you kind of thing. And I know when you get into the legal aspects and questions, it can get a little tricky, but more information is better than not enough information. And that's why we really want to talk about this morning, to help people really stay out of trouble. What is, and I know you've provided some really excellent questions, and if anybody would like to refer to the article that she and Wendy and attorney Thomas Shorter authored, that is on the Paul website. But Wendy, what, I guess just to start out, what is the anti-kickback statute, just to give people a frame of reference on this?
Sure, Joe, and you know, I just want to mention to preface our conversation that the anti-kickback statute can certainly be a serious topic, especially so early in the morning. So, you know, I thought I would try and lighten things up by telling a joke about the anti-kickback statute. So I Googled anti-kickback statute and joke, and guess what? Nothing to be found. So I guess even Google thinks it's not a laughing matter. But you're right. The goal today is really to familiarize the listeners with the potential pitfalls under the anti-kickback statute. And so the anti-kickback statute, let me give you the official definition first, and then we can break it down a little bit further. The anti-kickback statute makes it a criminal offense to knowingly and willfully offer, pay, solicit, or receive any bribes, kickbacks, or anything of value that induces or rewards referrals of items or services that are reimbursable by a federal health care program such as Medicare, Medicaid, or TRICARE. So that's a long-winded way of saying that if someone intends to increase their referrals of Medicare or Medicaid beneficiaries, for example, by offering a discount below fair market value for certain services or by throwing in some free items, this could be a violation of the anti-kickback statute. And so, you know, Congress originally enacted the anti-kickback statute in 1972, and they had the goal of essentially protecting federal health care programs such as Medicare and Medicaid from fraud and abuse. And until it was enacted, there was actually only one provision in the law that sanctioned false claims. And so, you know, there had to be the law had to be made more robust to prosecute Medicare and Medicaid fraud. And then in the late 1970s, there were some amendments to the law, which increased the penalty for violating the statute from a misdemeanor to a felony to discourage further fraudulent activity. But significantly, you know, I gave you that long-winded version of the statute. Significantly, that the statute requires intent to find a violation of the anti-kickback statute. And so you really need to have that intent component. And while a person or, you know, an entity does not need to intend to violate the statute itself, it needs to intend to induce referrals with some type of, you know, offering or soliciting a thing of value.
What I liked, Wendy, about the article that you and Tom wrote was that you offer some AG opinions, some great examples, some real-life experiences that were out there in the marketplace where various entities were asking for an AG's opinion on it. And I know in the article there's some excellent references to those. It's kind of a living document of things that have happened so people can kind of look out for potential pitfalls. But I want to toss it over to Patrick, Chris, and Dan, too, given their experiences and how they see the anti-kickback and who potentially could be affected and in what ways.
Joe, you know, this is a bigger deal than I think a lot of people realize, and it's not meant to scare anybody, but, you know, it doesn't matter what type of service you provide or, you know, how big or small you are, what geographic region you're in, things that you may be doing that you think are innocent may actually get you in trouble, such as, you know, providing a discount for a facility because, you know, you like them or, you know, you're friends with them or, you know, they utilize your ambulance service exclusively, things like that. You just have to be careful and, you know, we are often guilty in our business of, you know, doing things a certain way because we've always done them that way. And that's where you have to be a little bit more careful and just kind of stop and think once in a while, you know, am I doing anything that may get myself in trouble? Because it's really not something you want to tangle with.
This is Patrick. I guess I would say, too, that none of us as ambulance providers should ever assume that whoever we're dealing with understands these laws either. You know, to think that, well, you know, that's a hospital, that's a nursing home, they know. And again, I'm not looking at it from the standpoint that we would be deceitful, but I think to rely on someone else's judgment may not be the best thing. So they may not understand this complicated topic just like we don't. So I think, again, just maybe some outside counsel. It's been really instrumental to have Godfrey and Khan helping our organization with some of these high-level topics. So just making sure that that our members know that it is important to get some outside perspective sometimes on some things and not just relying on others in the industry or in the healthcare field to fully understand and implement them, these types of things correctly.
That's a good point, Patrick. One thing that we've done is to make sure that employees understand a little bit about what we're talking about as well, and that there are some, especially here in Milwaukee, there are some transports that we do that really are not medically necessary. And it's important for us to make sure that all of our staff understands that just because we do some of these things, maybe as a charity, that they're not billed to anyone, and they're particularly not billed to the federal government. That's something that we feel is important to make sure people understand.
Yeah, this is Dan. I think the other thing that people need to realize is that the rules don't change based on what kind of a service you have. If you're volunteer or you're private or you're public or whatever, the rules don't set out any exclusions for type of service. So the little service is just as obligated to follow the rules as the larger service is. And sometimes I think that gets lost because I think there's a belief that, especially in the volunteer side of things, that a lot of these things don't apply to us.
Those are all excellent points. Wendy, let me bring it back to you then, based on what Chris and Dan and Patrick offered. I think the next logical question is, what can EMS providers do to help, avoid violation of anti-kickback statute? How can they keep out of or stay out of trouble?
Sure, Joe. Well, you know, it's important that we're all having this conversation today, first and foremost. I mean, it's really all about education and training, your staff to recognize if there are red flags in a potential arrangement with another provider. Obviously, ambulance suppliers are affected by the anti-kickback statute, and the reach of the law is very broad. So it covers transactions with hospitals, nursing facilities, dispatch systems, and other entities. And so you really need to carefully review the terms of the proposed transaction with another entity to make sure that there's nothing in that arrangement that could be perceived or construed to be a violation of the anti-kickback statute. So if something doesn't seem right if you see a potential red flag, obviously, one compliance strategy is to have your legal counsel, review the terms of the transaction. In addition, as we've seen, if the transaction might fall into a gray area and you want to find out how the government views the transaction, HHS's Office of Inspector General has posted their opinions from providers and others who have requested that they opine on their proposed arrangement. And so they have this process in place where, EMS suppliers, for example, can submit these what are called requests for advisory opinions to the Office of Inspector General. And then the OIG will respond to these requests and make their responses public on its website. And so, unfortunately, a person can use these advisory opinions that are published on OIG's website for guidance as to how the government might view a proposed transaction and its potential compliance with the anti-kickback statute, but it can't rely on them as gospel. As the facts of every proposed transaction are different. And so, you know, the government cautions people, rightly so, that you can't take an advisory opinion and say, okay, well, this says it's okay to do this, so therefore I can, you know, I can rely on this to get me out of trouble should there be an alleged violation. But, you know, EMS suppliers could submit their own advisory opinion request, and, you know, that's a pretty easy process, although, again, we'd recommend that you'd work with legal counsel to put together an opinion. It typically takes about 3 to 6 months to submit an opinion and get a response. But then once you get that response, you can rely upon that in connection with the proposed transaction.
That's one thing I noticed, Wendy, in the article that you and Tom co-authored, is that there are some AG opinions. There were entities that asked for an opinion on something that they were looking to create or had created, and it came back either favorable or not favorable in the opinion, but at least they had an understanding of, okay, this is our operating environment. It has been reviewed from a legal standpoint, and we can proceed or should discontinue. And that was the thing that I found very helpful, given the variety of situations that you shared through that writing. So my congratulations.
Absolutely.
And appreciation to you for bringing those things out that help kind of give people a framework of, okay, that's not good, and, oh, okay, I came into it thinking, well, that was probably a violation of the statute, and based on the opinion, it wasn't. So it falls in that gray area. We're going to take a quick break, but after our break, we're going to chat further with Wendy and also our co-hosts, Dan, Patrick, and Chris, about some exemptions to the violation of the anti-kickback statute. So there are some exemptions, and then also we're going to talk about what are the penalties if somebody kind of gets caught in this unfortunate situation. You're listening to EMS Live. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Joe Cavelli. For nearly 10 years, I used a LADTEX scheduling tool for my EMT shifts. Having had this personal experience, I'd like to share how easy it was to submit my work availability to management and be assigned shifts. It was also easy to pick up open shifts or trade with others. I could even view my work schedule for the month, week, or day and know who else I was working with well ahead of that first 911 call. Best of all, I could access my schedule and all the great features offered by LADTEX right on my smartphone, tablet, or computer. Are you using the grease board or paper handouts yet for your work schedules? If so, that is a thing of the past. You'll discover, too, that LADTEX is more than just a scheduling tool. It offers many other great features as well. To learn more about LADTEX features or to sign up for a free trial version, visit LADTEX.com. That's LADTEX.com. Online employee scheduling and workforce management is much easier, faster, and better with LADTEX.
You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin. And now back to the program.
Well, welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. It's a pleasure to have you with us. We're talking about anti-kickback statute as it relates to private and municipal ambulance services. Our guest is attorney Wendy Ahrens with the Godfrey and Kahn Law Firm in Madison. Wendy, before the break, we mentioned something about exemptions to a violation of anti-kickback. What does that all mean?
Sure, Joe. So due to the broad range of transactions that, you know, potentially could be implicated by the anti-kickback statute, there have been some statutory exceptions for certain types of payments. They're also known as safe harbors to the anti-kickback statute. And these are, you know, set forth in the law. And each of these safe harbors has a lot of requirements that need to be met in order to, you know, sort of be able to use that exemption from the anti-kickback statute. So, you know, it's important to keep in mind that simply because a proposed arrangement doesn't fit within the four corners of an anti-kickback statute exemption, this does not mean that the arrangement, you know, violates the anti-kickback statute. You know, it only means that it's possible that it could violate the anti-kickback statute, that it doesn't have that exempted automatic safe harbor that's applied to it. And of course, it still must be shown that the parties had the required intent to induce referrals. So some of these exemptions include, in particular, there's one that's directly relevant to ambulance suppliers, and it's related to ambulance restocking arrangements. And so ambulance restocking programs where, you know, a hospital provides supplies and other items to the ambulance when it, you know, comes in and dropped off patients, you know, could be seen as potentially the hospital is giving something of value, right, to a potential source of patient referrals, which would be the EMS company. And so this ambulance restocking safe harbor was enacted to provide, you know, this exemption. And there are a lot of requirements to this exemption that need to be met before this safe harbor can apply. But this is one safe harbor in particular that does directly apply to ambulance suppliers. And in addition, there are a lot of other safe harbors, such as a personal services and management contract safe harbor, and other safe harbors involving space and equipment rentals and certain investment interests.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Wendy. I wanted to bring Dan, Patrick, and Chris back if there was anything regarding this that you see from the exemption standpoint, things maybe in your operations or operations you're aware of.
You know, Joe, I would just say that I've seen articles saying that more and more hospitals have been shutting down their ambulance medication and supplies restocking programs. And I'm not sure, you know, if Patrick or Chris or Dan have heard about this or seen evidence of this, but, you know, there's been this sort of rumbling that, you know, the hospitals are concerned that their programs might violate the anti-kickback statute, even despite this safe harbor. But it sounds like, based on the articles that I've seen, that sometimes, you know, the hospitals are really shutting them down because they're trying to cut costs. You know, that's, of course, just based on some articles that I've read, and that may not necessarily be happening here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wendy, this is Dan. We had some questions from our local hospital, just wanting to make sure that we were both on the same page. They didn't shut anything down for us. They just wanted to make sure that really they were being proactive, wanted to make sure that we were aware of the regulations. And I told them that we were fully aware and made sure that they understood what their roles were as well. And so we're just kind of business as usual now.
Sure. And, you know, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, this anti-kickback statute compliance really applies to both sides because the statute applies to both parties, both the giver and the receiver. So, you know, they want to make sure that, you know, the obligations that they need to meet are being fulfilled. And likewise, you know, on your side, you want to make sure of that as well.
This is Patrick. Not real recently, but I know there's been a kind of a change in mindset here locally in Dane County regarding, you know, the delivery on a regular basis of different treats and things. I know we've never entered into that, you know, on a regular basis, but some of the hospitals have even said when, you know, on special occasions to try to drop off a treat, you know, hospital appreciation or Nurses Week, that kind of thing, have kind of just said they're not accepting those things at all anymore, and even kind of moving into the realm of the, you know, the advertisement type things that we use in our industry. So, yeah, I have seen that kind of shift over the last few years. I think some folks still, you know, continue to do that. We just, like I said, never have, but now the hospitals, I think, are becoming more cognizant of that and actually just kind of saying, we don't want to accept that stuff at all.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, you know, there are staff at hospitals that, you know, won't even accept a pen. And there are some exemptions for, you know, items of nominal value, but it's easier to just avoid it altogether.
yeah, I definitely see where they're coming from. It almost kind of seems, you know, you get silly at some point. Yeah, like when you get down to those small little things. But definitely, you know, on the larger regular basis, that, you know, especially when you go back 20, 25 years, is probably something we've all, you know, heard about and knew that was kind of pretty commonplace. So, you know, some of that is refreshing. I think kind of puts less stress on us to have to, you know, keep up with whomever.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Wendy, I know the penalties are pretty severe with this, too, and you brought those out in the article. Do you mind touching on those?
Sure. You know, the consequences for violating the anti-kickback statute can be steep. There are criminal penalties that can include fines of up to $25,000 and a five-year prison term per kickback. And then there are also civil penalties that can be as much as $50,000 per violation, in addition to three times the amount of damages sustained by the government. And then violators can also be excluded from federal health care programs such as Medicare and Medicaid. So, you know, that's obviously something that would put someone out of business. A violation can also lead to civil liability under the False Claims Act. So there are a lot of penalties associated with a violation of the anti-kickback statute. But again, remember, the parties have to, you know, have this intent to induce referrals. So it is an intent-based statute. It's not a statute that is applies automatically. That there is this required element of intent that needs to be shown.
Very good. Thank you for the review of anti-kickback statute. It's something that we all need to be aware of in this business. Information is a very powerful thing, and this can be a gray area, so it's important to ask questions if you're finding yourself in a situation or considering a contract or being asked to deliver or provide certain goods, services, or incentives. And it's good to review things with an attorney and get a professional opinion on it. Wendy, if people have questions after listening to this podcast or referring to the article that you and Tom co-authored, how may they get in touch with you?
Sure. They can either contact me by telephone. My direct line is 608-284-2659 or email. My email address is warends@gklaw.com.
Very good. Wendy, thank you for being a part of the program today and for sharing your information with us. And again, we refer our listeners to the article that is posted at the Paul website. Our appreciation to you and Tom.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Joe, and I appreciate being on the program with Chris, Patrick, and Dan.
Okay. Nice to have you with us. Well, Chris, Patrick, and Dan, what do you think? Very important conversation, information that people in our business from a leadership standpoint and delivering care, everybody needs to know about this. If you see something, say something, I think is the motto with something like this.
Yeah, this is
Patrick. Sorry, go ahead, Dan, I think that was.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I think that, you know, this is what we really need to be doing, and that's why I think this show is such a benefit to the services, is that, you know, we hopefully are picking topics that people really should be aware of. Maybe sometimes they think they already know it or they don't even know about it, but I think that's one of the things that we've really decided is a key thing, that this is the forum for providing some of that information, and I think what we're trying to do is really a good positive thing.
Yeah, I was just going to add, I think this is a great example of, I think, what the different perspective that PAW brings. These are just things that you don't really hear about elsewhere, and these are the things that are important to our membership. So, again, I think just a great credit to Joe, and then also the partnership with Godfrey and Khan has been really, really valuable. So, way to go, Joe. Another great show to bring something that, you know, on a topic that you really can't get anywhere else.
That's right. Thank you, Patrick. Wendy's always done a terrific job. She's not only addressed this for us, but ambulance compliance and also Medicare. These are important things that our ambulance industry needs to know about in Wisconsin. How do you navigate some of these rough waters? How do you keep yourself out of trouble? And how do you keep your operation performing at a high level? These are all the important things. And hopefully through this podcast, we're delivering those topics so that we're creating conversation. We're opening up somebody's eyes or opportunities to to what could be, or just an evaluation of their operation. How do they stay out of trouble? I know the compliance plan program we did with Wendy a few months back was very well received. Dan spoke highly of it and recently completed training himself. And I know it's led to people contacting Dan about how did he go about his compliance training certification.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope that, you know, the more people that take an interest, the better. The better for the industry. So hopefully a lot of people will listen to this program.
Okay, anything else?
No, this is Dan. I'm good.
Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you all for participating today. The next EMS Live program is Tuesday, May 10, starting at 9. We don't have a guest lined up yet, but we have a couple invitations out, and I can promise you it will be something timely and important that everybody should know about. So once we have that information, we'll be sure to share it statewide. EMS Live in Wisconsin is broadcast live via the phone and internet, streamed live the second and fourth Tuesday every month. Today's program was recorded and will be available shortly on demand for playback from the PAW homepage at paaw.us. I'd like to thank you very much for being a part of the program today. Patrick, Chris, and Dan, we again extend our appreciation to attorney Wendy Ahrens with the Godfrey & Kahn Law Firm in Madison for offering her information today on ambulance service, anti-kickback statutes, things you need to be aware of as either a private or municipal ambulance service. Thanks for being with us. We'll look forward to joining you again on Tuesday, May 10th, starting at 9 a.m. Have a good day.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.